A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on September 5, 1993, entitled, Hallowed Time That Hallows Time. The scripture readings are Genesis 1, verses 1 through 5, and chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, and Mark 2, verses 23 through 28. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 2, verse 3, and Mark 2, verse 27. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
I have a wonderful gift for you today. It is the gift of this day. It is the gift of Sabbath. It is a gift of God. It is one of God's most precious gifts. It is a gift that we desperately need to appropriate and enjoy. The message has already been beautifully expressed in a poem, in the prayer, and I will simply reiterate those expressions as I invite you to hallow time by observing hallowed time. In hallowing certain times, we tend to sanctify all time. And while hallowed time can be experienced any time, any moment, anywhere, nonetheless, to have those special hallowed times tends to enable us to experience hallowed time more generally throughout our lives. Abraham Heschel, a great Jewish sage, philosopher, theologian, has a wonderful little meditation entitled The Sabbath, in which he speaks about the holiness of time. And it opens with a section which he entitles Architecture in Time. Isn't that an interesting image? Architecture in time. And he says, for the Jew, our Sabbaths are our great cathedrals. He points out that we tend to think spatially and to conquer space and to construct and build things in space. But actually, what we are called to in Sabbath observance and that gift which Judaism brought to the world was that sense of the sacredness of time and the importance of taking time simply to be. I will confess to you that Colette could pray so poignantly this morning because she's never learned to observe Sabbath and desperately needs to. And probably the only one here worse than she is Peter. And the only one worse than Peter is myself. So please do not hear this message this morning as a call to become obedient to some Sabbath law, emulating thereby your pious pastors. We are the worst offenders. In my own experience of Sabbath, which I suspect may not be so different from many of you, I grew up as a child, not unnaturally, not particularly lusting after the Sabbath. There was a little touch of the ugly Sunday for me. It was a day of many dues, which began quite against my will with a Saturday evening bath. And I had to change underwear whether it was necessary or not. And you may laugh, but polishing shoes, taking the bath, changing the underwear, don't think that wasn't part of the Sabbath ritual. It was ritual. In my home, it was ritual. And there isn't a child, a normal child, living that takes kindly to that kind of routine. And Sunday itself, well, it was a day of going to church and of not doing all those fun things that I love to do. And I came into the ministry preaching Sunday like that because I wanted a lot of people in church to hear my erudite sermons. And so I think I probably preached the Sabbath with the same rigorous legalism with which I was raised. And when I was converted and became a Christian, some years into my ministry, for a long time I couldn't preach about Sabbath. I couldn't preach about Sabbath because it tied my stomach up in knots, because I was so fearful of duplicating, of recreating the kind of moralism and legalism that I continued to carry with myself with a kind of distaste. And then I came finally to see that in what I had been freed from, which was a blessing and a grace, I had also lost something very wonderful, something that is a gracious, precious gift of God to us all. I began to see, I suspect, God's intention in Sabbath observance from the perspective of desperately needing to have rest. Well, Sabbath is a gift of the Jewish people. It's rooted in the Old Testament. It comes out of the rhythm of the creation story. In 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day, God rested from all God's labors, and God blessed that day and hallowed it. God rested, says the Hebrew poet. God rested, not out of sheer exhaustion, which is the kind of thing that's called me back to Sabbath, but God rested in order to delight in the works that God had perfected. And there's quite a difference. The Sabbath in the creation story was a day to rest in order to delight. It was a day for the cessation of the ordinary routines of life. It was a day to cease from labor, from doing, from performing, from achieving. It was a day to let go of that compulsion within us to justify ourselves through our achievements and our production. It was a day to delight. Three times God speaks of looking on what God had made and saying it is very good. And that sense of goodness was not a moral goodness, but an aesthetic goodness. It was delightful. It was lovely. The Hebrew writer says God looked and delighted in what God had made because it was simply lovely. And Matthew Fox, the Catholic theologian who has been thrown out of the Dominican order and is in some considerable trouble with the Vatican for some of his theological reflections, has brought to our consciousness the phrase original blessing, as opposed to the heavy emphasis that comes out of those Genesis stories on original sin. The Catholic tradition and the Reformation tradition, out of the Catholic tradition, the whole Western Christian tradition has been obsessed with original sin, has been shaped by the fall, has been formed by the over-againstness of God and creature and creation. But I think Matthew Fox has a very legitimate, a very true biblical insight when he speaks of original blessing. God created and God said it is good, and God delighted. And God invites us to share in that delight in the works of God, in that which is given, in that which we have not achieved or constructed or produced, but in that which God gives, to rejoice in the gift, a day in which to cease and to delight, a day in which to cease and to contemplate God. For God also hallowed the day. God made it a holy day. One day in seven was to be a holy day. And a holy day simply means a day set apart, a different kind of day, a day that had within it time to be and to be open to God and to be open to God's creatures, to be open to one another. God blessed this day and delighted in it. God hallowed this day and invites us to make it very special, a day set apart. Originally in Jewish faith, there was nothing that connected Sabbath and worship. It was rest to enjoy, to delight, and to be open to God, to recognize that life is a gift and that all is grace, to cease from our compulsive drivenness, to cease from the tyranny of the routine, the tyranny and the drudgery of labor as it so often becomes. There was this interruption in the cycle. Hans Küng, in his study of Judaism, points out that particularly in the industrial age and now post-industrial age, that interruption is under attack because we have machines that are efficient and need not be shut down. And so we could design a workforce with flex time. And actually, flex time can be an advantage to some people, but can you imagine a whole workforce that was operating on flex time so that there could be no cessation of the production? And in our Enlightenment West, with our heavy concentration on analytical thinking and our reasoning that looks at nature and material reality with impersonality, with the desire and the design to control and to manage it, We have the potential of creating an incessant machinery that simply goes on and on and on. But if there is no interruption, then that may make good economic sense. But it fails then to grasp us and to grip us and to say to us, for God's sake and for your sake, rest, stop, cease, hold it. That's what the Sabbath really needs to do to us. That's what Sunday, which can be our Sabbath, Saturday, the Sabbath, in Jewish faith, Sunday, the Lord's Day, the day to remember resurrection, doesn't really matter. The fact is that there is in that cycle of seven that point at which the spell is broken. That's what we need. The spell broken. And you know that doesn't happen simply by going to church. I might be able to zing one or two of you today if I said that simply because you're here at the early service and are now going off to work doesn't mean that you've observed Sabbath. Didn't see anybody wince just because you become impervious to my darts. That's the mistake the church makes. That's where our legalism has come in. The church in its institutional form tends to see itself as an end in itself, and its service and its worship as an end in itself, rather than seeing everything about the church as instrumental to human well-being. So that there is no such thing as stopping by here to fulfill the Sunday obligation. There is no Sunday obligation. This can be a very valuable and important moment in the observance of Sabbath. But if you catch this on the run, the cycle isn't broken, do you see? There's not interruption. And some of us who are particularly inclined to an entrepreneurial bent, our minds never stop. And you don't have to be in industry to do that. You can be in ministry and do that too. Go through an observance. But never stop thinking, never stop planning, never stop scheming, never stop projecting. We have too easily identified Sabbath observance with church attendance, when at its heart, it is rest, cessation, an oasis, an interruption, a breaking of the cycle. And some of us become so compulsive and so driven that it becomes an addiction. And unconsciously, I suppose, we are justifying our existence by performance and achievement. And we may be highly successful, but we may be missing the wonder and the delight of life as God's gift, and the realization that all is grace, Finally, I can't secure my existence. So if I stop and take my hands off the reins for a bit, it's a sign to me. It is a ritual action, if you will. It is a lived out parable that I am not finally in control. I am not finally the secure of my own existence. I rest in God. I live by grace. All is grace. And I need subtle nudges in that direction, like a 2x4 over the head once in a while. So, Sabbath, God's great gift. Losing the gift quality because of legal regulations and restrictions. And yet, the other side of the coin is no regulations and restrictions, and it evaporates and we lose it. In Exodus, the Ten Commandments, it says, observe the Sabbath. The Sabbath law, the fourth commandment, is the very heart of the Decalogue. About a third of the whole script of the Decalogue is taken up with Sabbath observance. And in Exodus, it's keep the Sabbath to remember creation. But if you read the second Decalogue in Deuteronomy 5, you'll find keep the Sabbath to remember the Exodus, liberation, salvation. But the order is interesting. It doesn't say keep the Sabbath so you'll remember. Excuse me. It doesn't say remember and so keep the Sabbath. It says keep the Sabbath and you'll remember. Now that just plain plays into our human nature. If I keep the Sabbath, I will remember. If I try to remember and thereby keep the Sabbath occasionally, I will forget. It is Thomas More in his book Care of the Soul that we've been looking at the last couple of weeks, this modern depth psychologist speaks about the necessity of religious observance. Now, he's very careful to say it does that it's broader than religious observance, but he calls us to certain observances, to observe. That means I simply make some deliberate choices to do some things in certain ways, to cultivate certain patterns, to follow certain disciplines, because thereby I become shaped. He uses Christmas as an example. You may be a Scrooge, but just try observing it this season. And as you observe the season, the spirit of the season is going to sneak up on you. And if you continue in a serious observance of the spirit of Christmas, the spirit of Christmas will permeate your spirit. And that is simply an example of what the Old Testament writer knew, and that to which Thomas More calls us moderns who have lost our soul. Keep it, and you will remember. And when you remember, you will be released. You will be set free. You will be enabled to be human. You will be enabled to find space to breathe, to catch your breath, to be open to God and to community, and thereby we save our humanity. Now, I don't know how to balance On the one hand, my deep conviction that there is no Sunday obligation. With my equally deep conviction that without the observance, one will lose the grace. Perhaps if we could just continue to think of Sabbath in terms of gift, and invitation to breathe deeply, to delight, simply to be, we will keep it and be kept by it. That would be to be careful for your soul.